I hope today's conversation has been deep and transformative. Please consider becoming a Patreon supporter to help us continue and expand the Honesty Talks podcast. When you are a Patreon supporter, you will get to be a part of our online community. You can also get other great things like early access to episodes, participating in polls, and making suggestions on future podcast topics, and so much more. For more information and to donate, go to patreon.com/honesty_talks. Thank you for listening and join us next time. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Honesty Podcast. And right now we are actually going to be doing a series of everyday devotionals for counting the Omer in this season between Easter, Passover, Easter, Shavuot, and Pentecost. So there's this period of time that in the Jewish tradition they count what is called the Omer. And today, to help, actually for the next couple weeks, I have Jessica with me here, Jessica Larrabee, to help us walk through this every day for the next 3 weeks. So I'm going to hand it over to Jessica to say hi and actually explain what is an Omer.
Hi, yes. I would like to state that the Omer is 7 weeks, but we are starting in already at week 5, so we'll be doing the last 3 weeks of it. And the reason that we're okay with already starting halfway through is because an Omer is the amount that will fill you spiritually. So it is the perfect amount that will give you how much you need, and it will last for how long you need it. So no matter where you start, enter into it, you will still get what you need out of counting the Omer and sitting in what it means and reflecting with God on what the Omer will bring to you.
Awesome. And the historical reference to the Omer is, first it's used in Exodus to refer to the amount of manna taken every day. So that's kind of the spiritual filling that you're talking about.
Yes.
And historically, it was used to count down the days from Passover to when the people gathered around Mount Sinai in the Old Testament. And this throughout time, also when the temple was operational, built, they used this period of time from Passover until Shavuot, which is first fruits, to count grain offerings and what they would offer to God, their first fruits.
Yes, and the first use is in Exodus 16, and that is something we like to do a lot, is look at where's the first use in the Bible. So that is where we get the definition from, is related to counting the manna. And it also relates to, if you count the Omer but then try to hoard it and control it for yourself, it becomes rotten and stinks, which is what happens if they tried to keep the manna for too long. So it is the balance of holding what God has given you but not trying to control it.
Awesome. And there is a lot of historical references too, of like counting the Omer is, in history it was an agricultural society. And so offering first fruits of their harvest was a big deal because it was everything that they did. It was how they lived. They grew all of their own food, and they offered the first fruits of that to God. And the Omer, in where it first shows up in scripture, the word Omer, using to count, is in Exodus, but it's in the spiritual sense of counting the amount of manna God provided for the people. And so that's how that is like hooking together, that there's this, it is really the spiritual context in what we are counting in ourselves and leading up to being at the mountain of God with the people of God. And also, what are we offering during this time frame in first fruits, and then following the Mount Sinai and first fruits time is Pentecost. Mm-hmm. It's like a couple days after that, and the coming of the Holy Spirit, and that all these things, like the timelines that don't happen all at once, they happen through time, are not happening on accident.
Correct. Yes. And when we look at Exodus 16, it says it is enough to fill your head and your soul. So it's really emphasizing on God's provision being enough for you physically, but also being enough for you spiritually, mentally, and just really how you inhabit the space with time and trusting that God's provision will continue to come.
And also with the historical context of offering grain, it's also the work of your hands is what's needed to be surrendered to God too.
Mm-hmm.
it isn't just about taking, there's a relationship. Mm-hmm. I think that the historical and, well, they're both historical because manna happened way before offering of grain, but like throughout time, that there's a both.
And I think it teaches us how to hold the passing of time better. Like, we are just leaving Passover, which is about what are you leaving during this season? And then it teaches us how to be mindful with our time as we move forward and as we're leaving out of this space, and just the intentionality of being present with God so we don't go back into the narrow place that we just left.
Mm. And for those of you who are listening and might not know what Passover is about, to give you a little background, Passover is 7-8 days long, and it is a whole week. And we celebrate during this time the exodus of the people from Egypt. And Egypt in the Hebrew is Mitzrayim, and Mitzrayim means narrow place. So there is a large spiritual truth to every year at Passover. We are looking at what are the narrow places that we have become slaves to. We work worshiping, serving other things other than God that we need to leave in life. And those can be spiritual realities, and they can also be physical realities. They can be jobs, relationships, things we believe about ourselves that we need to leave. So in this season where we've identified things to leave, counting the Omer is then a way to be more intentional and present with yourself and to not fall back into those patterns, mm-hmm. and really to make space for growth and what God brings. So as we are making this journey and counting the Omer, there is a structure in how we meditate on this and count it every day. And it involves prayers and a structure. So I'm going to let Jessica explain the structure of counting the Omer.
Yes, there are 7 different themes, and each week has its own theme, and each day has its own theme. And so you sit in what the weekly meaning is overall, as well as you sit in what the daily meaning is and how that plays a part into the weekly meaning.
So how it intersects. Awesome. And there's, when we're doing this, there's room for however, whatever God is speaking to you as you are counting, mm-hmm. and those weekly themes and daily themes, how they intersect. There'll be things that God points out to you that really stick with you. And really, it's a practice of hearing.
Mm-hmm. Hearing where God is leading you and what you need, because what Trin might need is different from what I need and what I'm going to get out of the counting.
So we want this to be a richness of space that's provided as we count the Omer, that there's room for individually, we're going to encounter that differently.
Mm-hmm.
And so we just hope that you get a lot of richness out of these devotionals. We're going to share how we both interact with it, which is very different, and that there's room for how God may be moving in you in the counting of the Omer, mm-hmm. as well. Good evening, everyone. Today is, we're starting a new week, so it's week 6. It is the 36th day of the Omer, and right now we're going to switch the week theme, and this week's theme is Yesod, which is foundation, power, procreativity, bonding, covenant, reciprocal relationship, and the people who go with this are Joseph and Tamar, and the color is orange.
Yes, and it is May 2nd, and the day is Chesed, which is loving kindness, benevolence, generosity, grace, altruism, unconditional love. And the people are Abraham and Rebecca, and the color is white.
I feel like this is heavy. Like, this is going to be a heavy week when the week is Yesod, and it's foundation, power, procreativity, bonding, covenant, reciprocal relationship.
Let's get it.
Get it? And then, like Chesed, no big deal. Loving kindness, unconditional love, generosity, grace. Like, those are all really big things.
Yeah. The picture that goes to my head is like the loving kindness is like the sand on the beach. It's just there and it floats and goes with the current. And then the Yesod is like a giant wave coming and crashing into it.
Yeah. I like the word pictures we try to make, and I want to like watch listeners try to make sense of our word pictures, like that one and like the garden with the harp. And
please comment if these do not make any sense. We will stop. Probably not, but I would like to hear what you have to say.
We'll put some more work maybe into
we'll learn how to paint a picture with words.
A better picture. Instead of sand and waves and a garden with a harp. Whatever.
Yeah. I find it weird that the weekly color is orange. I don't know, like, orange has just never been, like, a color that has spoken to me. Like, very few people look good in orange.
Of course you would take it to the clothes.
Yep.
I guess I don't see orange a lot out there. I think of, like, sunset orange.
Oh, my mind goes to prison jumpsuits.
Guys, you can't get any different than right now. Prison jumpsuits. I think of the sunset. It is a very powerful color, though. If you really think about it, orange, like, assaults your eyes.
I was like, no matter where you see it, you're not going to miss it. If it's orange, it's orange. Like, that's why construction's orange, because you see it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think it makes sense then that this, like, orange stands for the foundation, power, procreativity, bonding, covenant, reciprocal relationship. Because those things are very, like, you shouldn't be able to ignore those things. I feel like the color's a little bit of a call out of, like, hello, I'm here. You should be looking at me all the time.
And how powerful is it that, like, the first two, like, spots where I think of orange in nature is, like you said, the sunset, but then, like, the other, on the flip side, my mind goes to, like, fire, lava, destruction, like, so it's either, like, this beautiful, calm thing, or it's, like, this force that you can't control.
I think you're right. And I think the orange in the sunset reminds me of time. Like, what are you doing with your time every day? Like, you don't have unlimited amount of time. So, like, I feel like the sunset and the orange in every day is just a reminder of what are you doing with your time? And I think the fire is, like, it can keep you warm, but it can burn your ass, too.
Yep.
Yep. That was a definitive moment, people. And now Jessica's laughing at me.
But I mean, it's true. Like, I mean, you hear that about wildfires that, like, start in the woods all the time, of, like, it starts as this camping fire, and then all of a sudden, like, now you have, like, 100 acres on fire because somebody didn't properly care for it.
So maybe it's more like fire isn't the problem, it's the care that comes with the fire, or lack of.
Which, I mean, that's what happens in reciprocal relationships and with power and building a foundation. Like, all of these things take so much care, and if you don't put the correct care into it, they do kind of blow up on you.
I also think of I like that thought just triggered a thought in my brain.
I could see the light bulb.
I know. I wish the other people could see it. It's almost like alarming. I'm sure Jessica's sick of my, like, violent reactions to what's going on in my head.
No.
But that reminds me of the burnt offering outside the temple.
Go there.
Like, the orange. Like, okay, so I went and I did this, like, I suggested to all of you. There is a nonprofit organization that goes around and they've recreated the temple, or, like, the tabernacle, not the temple, tabernacle. The tent that God used to be in with the Ark of the Covenant. And where people would, like, offer stuff. So they recreated it. And this experience of, like, exactly how, and they take you through it, the different elements. And before you even get into the temple, there's these stations outside of offering. And so one of them, which I'm taking you this year, if they do it this year, if COVID is, like, not still as bad. But outside of the temple would be where the burnt offerings happen. Like, there's this big place where you put burnt offerings out. And so I think of the burnt offering in conjunction with the tabernacle and even the temple.
Yeah.
Like, fire, orange, like, what are we offering God? And this, along with, like, the covenant, reciprocal relationship, bonding, power, foundation. That's what I think about.
I like that we brought orange here, because we have a friend who told me once that, like, orange is associated with trauma and, like, therapy color. And I was like, that never sat right with me. Like, not that it's not associated with trauma, but like, I've always felt like there's so much more.
Mm. Yeah. And I think it's like the fire of burnt offerings.
Mm-hmm.
And you think about this fire in the Bible, there's a consuming fire that mm-hmm. the Bible talks mm-hmm. about, and there's a not consuming fire.
I mean, God appeared in a pillar of fire.
And the burning bush that was not consumed and on fire.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And even Moses, when he ascended the mountain, people saw him consumed by fire from down below.
Yes.
So, like, what does it mean that the Spirit of God is often in the form of fire?
Interesting. And, like, from Moses' standpoint,
mm-hmm.
it looked differently. It was is more like cloud rather than fire. But the people below saw it as a consuming fire. Mm-hmm. And it like that speaks to our lens in which we are looking at things through.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, I hope you all are following us because we're jumping all over the place and it's good.
I was going to say, not to jump again, but like, then my next thought is like, he appeared as a cloud to Moses. And when they wandered around, it was either a cloud of fire or a cloud of water and like pillar of water and cloud. And like the fact that those two things, like, water puts out a fire. That, like, how opposite they exist in nature, and that these are the elements that God appears in.
I love that. Because, yeah, like, cloud is just one big vapor, water vapor.
Mm-hmm.
And it's they're, like, opposite ends of the spectrum, and that God is inhabiting, bringing God's self in two very paradoxical forms.
Mm-hmm.
Like a pillar of cloud. I just think that is paradoxical. Like a pillar of water vapor. That's not like a pillar is like something that's like strong and solid and mm-hmm. like, you know what I'm saying? They're just very paradoxical. And I think God does stuff like that so that we love to put things in boxes. We like to noun everything.
Mm-hmm.
Static. Box. Stay still. It's this.
Talk about that reciprocal relationship. Then if fire and water and that's what we're being invited into. Like,
we have to live in the tension. We're asked mm-hmm. to hold the tension. And I think too often in our faith walks, what we're doing is trying to escape the tension.
I feel like most people are like, oh, I want the water that's peace and calming, and fire's scary. I don't want that.
Yeah, good luck. I don't think you can escape it.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
And just the unconditional love that comes with power. God's power.
Say more about that.
Because I'm jumping back to like our day meetings. Like, I just like, I'm looking at what these words are, and it's the unconditional love with God's power of like, throughout the Bible and the Old Testament especially, so many people read God as like this awful thing. Like, oh, he sent the like 10 plagues upon the people and all of these horrible things. How could he do that? And it's like, if you actually read it in the Hebrew and read it for what it is, there's so much love that God is doing in those things.
So I think of, as you're saying that, the grace and the foundation that God is laying.
Mm.
Like, it seems hard, but it's not. Like, it's not always harsh. Like, the 10 plagues were for the people to realize where they were.
I love that. The foundation of grace. Like, what does it mean to have your foundation built upon grace?
Right, a very solid thing.
Mm-hmm.
Mm, that's what I'm thinking about.
Well, and even just, like, pro-creativity and generosity. Like, you create this life, but then you can't hold it. You can't keep it for yourself and be like, I created it, it's mine. You need to be generous. You need to put it into the world and allow it to be what it's going to become.
Mm. Yes. I also think of the generosity of the covenant and reciprocal relationship and bonding.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be generous with yourself and even with the person.
Mm-hmm.
And with God, like, in a covenant relationship, in a reciprocal relationship, the generosity needed to cultivate that kind of relationship on both ends.
Mm-hmm.
And I think even communally, the generosity to have reciprocal relationships and sacred community.
The loving kindness that needs to exist in that.
Yes.
Yeah.
And in order to bond, you have to be pretty generous.
Mm-hmm.
With yourself, the other person with you. Like if we're just talking about like a one-on-one relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same thing with God. Like people are like, oh, I just feel very distant with God. But it's like, how generous with yourself are you being with God to create a bond?
And that's, I tell people often, like, if you're distant with God, God's not the one that's distant. It's you are. So what are you doing that's creating that distance?
Right. It's not easy.
Mm-mm.
Like, it's not easy, like, cultivating a covenant bonding reciprocal relationship. It's not always easy to see the loving kindness of that, the benevolence.
I was just thinking the benevolence that exists in that, like.
And the benevolence in the power and foundation.
And I'm looking at Abraham, like, the example of, like, loving kindness and grace, but then he's the foundation. Like, God told them that there will be generations that are as plentiful as the stars in the sky, like.
And well, the generosity of living a life knowing, because Abraham knew he wouldn't live to see the fulfillment of that promise. He would live to see maybe grandkids, but not numerous as the stars in the sky and the sands on the ground.
Mm-hmm. The unconditional love that he has for God to continue and try to follow what God's saying, and even when they mess up, like, they turn to God every time and are like, continue to lead me.
Right.
Like, that to me is an example of what it's like to have the reciprocal relationship with God.
Yeah. And just like, we always look at like the unconditional love and the bonding and the covenant reciprocal relationship on God's end. But like, what is our responsibility in that? Because like, when you think of love or love in a relationship or the unconditional love, like we have a responsibility to bring that to and to cultivate that. I mean, obviously we need to partner with God for that, but like we have a responsibility. It's not just, oh, I receive everything from you, God, and I have no responsibility. Like we have a responsibility to unconditional love with others, with God, like loving kindness towards people, benevolence towards people, to create a reciprocal relationship. And I think of like what's going on in our world today. Sorry, I'm going to get on a soapbox a little bit. But what's going on in our world today and the reciprocal relationship that's needed, especially with racial tensions. And do you actually, are you displaying the loving kindness to have a reciprocal relationship with somebody whose very existence here in this country has been very different than your own?
Yes.
Are you being generous with your time, your ears, yourself, to sit in the uncomfortability, to create a reciprocal relationship? Because as a person of color, like, I have a hard time. I don't always believe people when they say they're allies, because I always think, yeah, we'll see. Because usually people tap out, because there's no reciprocal relationship there for me. Like, what are you giving of yourself? What kind of loving kindness do you show? What kind of unconditional love do you show people who have had such different experiences than you?
And can you even be generous with what you do have to give it to people who don't?
Exactly. And that's where I think about power.
Mm-hmm.
You can be an ally, but when it really counts, are you going to hand that power to somebody who doesn't have it? Or are you going to continue to hoard it? And say that you're for the betterment of someone else when your actions would need you to surrender power to the voice that's not at the table.
And if you don't have that generosity with the power, you're killing the procreativity.
Oh, absolutely. Like what will be released in our world for generations to come. Like we are at a point in our world that what we do right now, each and every person in their daily lives with interacting with regular people, and what we come together and do as a community is going to lay the foundations of what young people inherit from us, from the change. And we're right now, like, it seems like what's being uncovered is the truth of our history. Can we stay in enough to look at it and create something better for the future? Because we remember where we were, so we can create something better, or we are doomed to make the same mistakes. That's why God always tells us, Zachar, remember.
Mm-hmm. I feel like we're at a turning point in our foundation of what we build from here matters. Like, what's behind us is crumbling. So as we build this new foundation, to keep the loving kindness and the grace in it.
Absolutely. And think about bonding, the covenant relationship, reciprocal relationship. That I don't think that's language that's just for us and God. I think that's us toward one another too. Mm-hmm. Like both.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I feel like even I read covenant and I think of like covenant with God. And I feel like a lot of people put that on God of like, oh, God made this covenant. And it's like, yeah, but that's two-sided. You have to keep it, too.
Oh, absolutely. You guard 10, keep my covenant.
Mm-hmm.
God says it when he like tells them that I want you to be a nation of priests. If you keep my covenant.
Mm-hmm. People forget that. People are just like, oh, God made this covenant for me. Okay.
But we have the duty to what? Shamar it is the word that's used with in the Bible when it says to keep my covenant. It's the word shamar, which is guard 10, keep.
Yes. And if you guys wonder where all this Hebrew is coming from, both Trin and I study biblical Hebrew. So that's where we're not pulling it out of thin air.
We can pull it out of thin air because we study it, yo.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think this is a good place to end this one because this was a deep conversation and I love this. So blessings on your night, and I hope that you awaken into greater things tomorrow. I hope today's conversation has been deep and transformative. Please consider becoming a Patreon supporter to help us continue and expand the Honesty Talks podcast. When you are a Patreon supporter, you will get to be a part of our online community. You can also get other great things like early access to episodes, participating in polls, and making suggestions on future podcast topics, and so much more. For more information and to donate, go to patreon.com/honesty_talks. Thank you for listening and join us next time.